Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Dock and boat ramp at Sanders Beach Boardwalk and Seawall do have some damage. If you recall, we've already fenced off that area for the $1.5 million revitalization project that's been in the works for quite a while. It was under construction, but both of those have damage, but the area is already closed to the public. But to underscore that, that area is closed to the public.
Little bit of update yesterday from Mayor D.C. Reeves. After we got done doing an hour on the air with him for the Radio Town Hall, he did his weekly press conference, gave an update on damage assessment that he had just gotten that morning from Bertha. Now the storm has passed and everything has gone down for the most part in our area, and it's moved over to Louisiana and even heading over towards Texas. But the Sanders Beach, the existing boat dock there, as you heard, has been damaged a little bit. I saw that for myself. Oh, sorry, not at Sanders Beach, but the next one that he's going to talk about at Bayview Park.
Bayview Park floating kayak dock and boardwalk, the dog beach in the pier underwater right now. So we're just asking folks to stay out of that area. Obviously, we'll have to wait for that surge to subside for us to tell you what the after effects or the damage to those areas are. But we're just asking folks right now to stay out of the Sanders Beach area that's already fenced off and those specific assets at Bayview.
Yeah, that kayak launch that's like three sides of a rectangle that goes out and bends around and comes back in right out on I got to do the geography in my head. The east side of the Bayview, you know, the Bayou Tahar side. The water was almost at the level of the dock, which is, I'm trying to go on memory, maybe 2 feet up from regular, maybe a foot up from regular. The dog beach down, you know, the dog park down at the beach, the sand one was probably 70% underwater. Dogs were still playing in it because, you know, what do they care whether the water's there or here? It's just a question of how much space there is between the water and the fence. But I was there yesterday. And so we went there because we went to the senior center, actually, to play hand and foot with the card ladies. My wife and I had a good time yesterday. I did not know that hand and foot would be a 3-hour engagement, but it was. but I'd never played that game before. I grew up playing like Pinochle and Euchre and Spades and Hearts and, you know, Canasta and all that. And this is a variation on some of those different things. Anyway, the ladies were lovely. Met a bunch of friends and they're great. But came out, you know, like 3 hours later, and it was enough time for the water to have receded, like in the time that we were in there. So I did see that it didn't go all the way back down by the time I left, but it had gone down significantly. Meanwhile, Bruce Beach
kayak launch is underwater. Doesn't look like there's any damage preliminarily. There's just that one metal dock there, facility for kayaks.
Yeah, and yes, if you're wondering, the ladies at the Hand and Foot at the senior center were fantastic, wonderful. Not a lot of men in that group. a lot of retired women in that group. And, you know, but we had a good time joining them. And they were delighted to see new people there, you know, especially of our age. My wife is always looking for fun, different things to do. And so, you know, like they play Pinochle there and I have to relearn the rules of Pinochle. And, you know, like all of this, just, you know, she's got us playing pickleball and adult dodgeball. And, you know, she's got us on this whole program of like doing fun things and meeting different people and, you know, learning stuff, which is, you know, good, right? I think that's probably what you're supposed to be doing.
We are aware that the Navy Pelican was knocked off its base, that the Parks and Rec has removed it to store under the interstate to prevent further damage.
That's the one at Garden and Palafox, so that's temporarily been removed so that it can be not get any more damage and also get whatever repairs it needs. Meanwhile, he gave an update on the budget, which is, I know, important to a lot of people, especially those of you who work for the city, but also it's important for you as a voter, if you're in the city as a resident, to think about, like, for example, the upcoming property tax referendum vote and who you want to elect for mayor or city council, understanding that they're dealing with a very budgetary constrained environment, trying to be prudent. You heard that Amy Lavoie had announced the other day that they were putting on a hiring freeze and raises. And anyway, so what are the specifics? Well, first, cost of living adjustment for the employees of the city.
We will have a cost of living adjustment for our for our employees. It averages out almost to the dollar at basically a 2% COLA.
COLA is the COLA, the cost of living adjustment, in case you don't know the acronym.
Obviously, traditionally, it's been a 3% COLA during the administration. And we've done it a little differently. I believe the county is doing the 2%. What we have done is employees that are earning under $75,000 will see a 2.5% COLA. Employees between 75 and 125,000 salary will get a 2% COLA, and then anybody above 125% will see a 1% increase COLA. So we've staggered it. We understand affordability is a crisis, and affordability is going to have the greatest impact on our employees, which is a large portion of our 875-ish employees, our folks making less than $75,000 a year. So we wanted to try to minimize the impact of that on those folks.
You know, prices go up, like the price of gas goes up, whatever, all the different prices that have gone up recently. Inflation's not, you know, It's better than it could be by a lot, but it's not where we would love it to be. But still, you know, giving a cost of living adjustment increase for 2.5% under 75, 2% up to 125, and then 1% for anybody over 125, and that nets out to about a 2% cost of living across the board if you average everybody's salaries times the increase.
Hiring freeze will be implemented as of September 1st. That will be for both full-time and temporary positions. There will be a procedure that's developed by HR. The example I give is if there's a position that happens to be unfilled on September 1st that's vital to the operation of the organization, obviously there will still be standards and additional protocols in place to be able to refill that job. So to put it in regular terms, that doesn't mean that you aren't going to hear about somebody being hired at the city of Pensacola, but just understand that we have put additional protocols in place that if a department needs to refill a position, that they will have to prove that value ultimately. But what it does not mean is if we have a director depart, that we're not going to fill the director job. Obviously, we're going to continue to do that to make sure that we operate as needed.
So it's more of a hiring chill instead of a hiring freeze, you know, like more like soft serve instead of ice. But no, I mean, obviously there are certain positions that you need to have. And so, you know, you're not expanding is the basic premise. And if you have positions that have been unfilled for quite some time, it might be just that, you know, you don't really need them as much. And they're always, of course, looking at that. But also a freeze on non-mandated overtime. And, of course, it's worth mentioning that if you have union contracts in place, none of this affects them.
Obviously, there, this when we talk about raises and COLA, that is non-union employees. Any fire, police, anybody who's on a contract that has predetermined raises, clearly we're adhering to those. And so PPD requires a $1.3 million increase to fund salaries as required by the CBA with the three police unions. So that will remain.
Yeah. So, I mean, which it's obvious, but it's also, you know, you can't just change a contract after the contract has been engaged in. 519 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. So that was the news from the city. There's other stuff about recycling. The change from the drop-off, unmonitored drop-off station at Summit was a catastrophe, but the change to having it in-house at the offices, that's actually working out really well. It saved a lot of money. It's increased the actually increased the number of collections and also dramatically reduced the contamination rate, which is very good. And he also gave some details about the curfew that they're thinking about, that they're going to bring before the city council. This is in response to that January 5th morning shooting that you heard David talking about. We just had a fourth arrest in the case, so that brings the total of people implicated in the incident to five. So four have been arrested, and one, of course, wound up taking his own life when they were going to serve a warrant on him. They're being a little cagey's not the right word. They're not really telling you a lot of the details, but like in this particular person's case, he was a minor who shot a gun and the victim didn't want to press charges. So what would you infer from that? Well, that the victim was a friend, much like the person who wound up getting killed was killed, it looks like, by a friend, the one who took his own life. It was like response fire to the initial shooting, which they say was 10 shots. That's the guy who got given the gun by the other teen and then gave the gun to the girl afterwards, all this allegedly. But, you know, so we have a kind of a two sides event here. And the side that was fired against initially And then the side that returned fire and some friendly fire in the process that people got hurt by their friends. One person apparently killed by gunfire from his own buddy. And so that's why, I assume, that's why he's not pressing charges. But you still have crimes you can prosecute, you know, the firing of weapon, the possession of weapon by a minor, that kind of stuff. So they say they don't expect any more arrests in this case, that the case is closed, and we'll be talking about that with Mike Wood coming up this morning. 437-1620, 437-1620. Meanwhile, today at the City Council, the County Commission, you can have a budget. But budgets are important right now because they're planning the local option sales tax renewal. They're planning the possibility of losing a massive chunk of ad valorem revenue from property taxes if the referendum passes. They're trying to figure out the DOGE environment. They're trying to figure out what the voters want. They're trying to, you know, they're all of these things. And then meanwhile, the thing that is going to generate the circus will be at the county commission meeting tonight. Data centers. There's, you know, it's on the agenda. And it's kind of funny if you read the item. Actually, I put away the actual agenda. I had it open earlier. Let me see if I can pull it up really quick while I'm stalling for time. But it's kind of funny the way it's worded, because what they want is a ban. You know, what the data center dissidents, or I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out my name for the group. You know, what do I want to call them? There's the Flock Fighters. That's easy. Got that. The Flock Fighters. And then there's the data center dissenters. I'm not sure. Maybe that kind of works. The data center dissenters. I kind of like that. Anyway, because it's got the same sort of sounds in there. They just care, and they're misinformed, and they're producing a lot of misinformation. And
the Karens,
that's funny. I kind of like that, too. But you know what's interesting about this? As many times as I've talked about this, do you know how many times I've had people text me and say that they hate data centers are evil, and I'm completely off my rocker? It's either zero or one. I can't remember if I've had even one person say, no, you're totally wrong about data centers. And that's one of the most misleading things about local government is the public forum and the public comments. Because what happens is a small group of people, and by the standards of the size of the county, even 100 people is a small group. There are 330,000 people that live in this county. Every county commissioner represents, you know what, 66,000 people? If 100 people show up, the statistical significance of that against even their entire district's population is zero, almost, right? Now, I understand that, you know, they may represent a group of people who have not showed up. It's entirely possible. It's also entirely possible that even 100 people are just the, you know, small group of upset folks who don't represent anybody but themselves. And if everybody else sits at home, well, it could mean one reasonable interpretation is that everybody else is like, okay, you know, it's fine. Just like in elections. You know, people sometimes complain that the participation rate in elections is low. And it's not a terrible criticism. You know, how dare you Americans not even vote? Well, a lot of people don't vote because they're not informed. But a lot of people vote because, you know, they don't care. But a lot of people vote because they don't like the alternatives. But, you know, an awful lot of people don't vote because things are fine. And the not vote is a comment that, it's fine. Because when things are not fine, people vote. When things are not fine, they show up to the city council or the county commission meeting. And so if people don't, out of the, look, again, 330,000 in Escambia County, 200,000-ish in Santa Rosa County. I think it just popped over 200,000 last year, 2 years ago. You know, if out of all of those populations, you get 100 people show up, that seems enormous against the backdrop of like 10 normally. There's maybe in Escambia County, there's like 10 always show up and always talk, and sometimes they know stuff and sometimes they don't. But, you know, when even 100 people show up, it seems like, God, it's a flood. Not really. So you can be misled by the appearance of a mob when what it really is like a small party. You know, it's not a mob. It's a small party. And if it's a small party, people all think the same and say the same and hold the same signs and get loud and cheer each other on. It's kind of an inbred group, you know, with intellectual, like what they're sharing with each other and what they're anyway. So I'm not sure that the data center opposition is this broad, massive, widespread thing. It might be. I might be completely wrong. I might be. I'm simply saying that if you look at the evidence and what they are and the arguments and you kind of walk it all the way through, this is a silly thing. To me, it's a silly thing. It's especially silly because we're banning a thing that's not coming to us, to Escambia County. Although, you know, theoretically it could. But anyway, the way it's phrased, you'll laugh at this. The way it's phrased is not ban. It's not phrased as moratorium. Which is what they want. They want to ban it all. It says, adopt and authorize the chair to sign the resolution memorializing its position that data center facilities are not permitted under the county's land development code and are not an appropriate form of development with the unincorporated area of Escambia County. This is the formal equivalent of, for y'all who aren't paying attention, let me repeat myself. They're not allowed. Like, they're already not allowed. We want to ban penguins. It's fine. You already can't have penguins. We want to ban elephants and icebergs. It's fine. You already can't have elephants and icebergs. Oh, okay. You know, so it's just, I'm sure there's going to be talk about that, and I'm sure it's going to be a circus, and I'm sure a bunch of people are going to participate, and in the end, it'll be a lot of smoke and not a lot of heat. 526 on News Radio, my opinion, okay? 526 on, but I'm glad people are participating. Democracy depends on people participating, and I would much rather have a lot of people participating than people just staying home, but again, you know, interpret what staying home actually means. Hey, if you need to get a new roof or you need to repair a roof or you're not sure which you need, Quality Roofing Solutions is there for you. Brian Ward started this company in 2006, 20 years ago, 10,000 roofs later and a 4.9 rating on Google. You know, they're kind of doing what they're supposed to do, which is a quality roof at a good price and treating people well that they like the results. And I had a good friend who heard me talking about this and they were needing to do the roof. So she had a few companies in and they bid and Quality Roofing was not the lowest. They were not the cheapest. But they were close. They certainly weren't the most expensive, and she went with them. And she's like, Andrew, they did what they're supposed to do. I'm completely satisfied. And several other neighbors in the area, same thing, just because of what they saw. They talk to you like your normal person. They won't condescend you. They'll return your phone calls. They did great customer service, which you don't always expect from contractors. Anyway, they're fantastic. QualityRoofingSolutions.com, 777-0961.
Some things can steal your sunshine. I just got my hair done.
Sorry, the cooler's broken.
Aww. Anyone see my flip-flops? Anyone?
But COVID-19 can steal a lot more.
I just took a COVID test. Ugh.
Prescription medications for COVID exist. If you test positive this summer, ask your doctor if they're right for you. Visit PfizerForAll.com/COVID-19 to learn more. Sponsored by Pfizer.
At FPL, we plan for storm season all year long. We're strengthening poles to better withstand severe weather. We're clearing lines to improve resiliency, and we're constantly training teams to act at a moment's notice. Because we're always working, always preparing. So when storms do hit, you can count on us. Learn more at fpl.com/storm. FPL, working for you every single day.
This is the story of the one. The one who keeps multiple buildings running smoothly day after day. Plumbing that flows, HVAC that hums, cleaning supplies that keep surfaces sparkling. That's why she counts on Grainger. With easy reordering online and 24/7 support, Grainger helps her keep the products she needs on hand. So shelves stay stocked and buildings stay ready. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You ever look at your bank account and think,
okay, that could be better?
Dave Ramsey, weeknights 7 to 10 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
There's a new pet.
Chia.
Chia Pet, the pottery that grows.
It don't matter, he's dope. He knows that, but he's pro. He's so stagnant, he knows when he goes back to this mobile home. That's when it's back to the
lab again. 529, News Radio 92.3. This is like the perfect song. I got my own fader over here. I'm pausing for a second to honor the great music. And in a way, this kind of perfectly represents Gen X. I mean, I know Eminem's only not really a Gen X time frame, but that we would in our heads be constantly oscillating between Eminem and Chia ads. That's pretty much that's us. That's who we are. And quoting Princess Bride in Star Wars. All right, 5:30 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, somebody texted me in. It's funny. Data centers are bad. I don't like them. And I am off my rocker. I don't know. Are they being sarcastic? I'm not sure exactly where they stand on this, so it's cute. But yeah, that'll be a big discussion, I'm sure, at the county commission meeting. And, you know, again, I love this resolution. Just For those of you who weren't listening in the back, these already aren't allowed. Now sit down. So I'm sure they'll love being treated that way.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. The U.S. military is not letting up, pounding Iran for a dozen straight nights.
CENTCOM says these strikes were once again focused on degrading Iran's ability to threaten vessels in the Strait of Hormuz. The Iranians have also released new statements over the past 24 hours, with the country's top negotiator, Mohammad Khalibov, saying on X, if our security is not ensured, no infrastructure will be safe.
Fox's Trey Yinks in Tel Aviv. Speaking in the Philippines, Secretary of State Marco Rubio says Iran is begging the U.S. to make a deal, but...
The problem with Iran is every time they make a deal, the people that are in charge there, they either break it or they want to change it. So it looks like they're not ready to make a deal, so they're going to continue to pay a price.
Eastern Texas could be the next target for Tropical Storm Bertha for a second landfall at some point today. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. We've got partly cloudy skies, 78 degrees right now. We're going to get a look at our forecast. That's up in just a few minutes. Well, a 30-year-old service member now facing charges after a series of crashes that left a 16-year-old Pensacola girl seriously injured on Tuesday night. Troopers say Zachary Frazier rear-ended a car on Perdido Key Drive, then fled and drove the wrong way onto the Perdido Key Bridge, hitting that teen's car head-on. Both were taken to the hospital. A breath test hours later showed Frazier's blood alcohol level at .163, more than double the legal limit. He's since been released from jail. Navarre Beach residents will see their first fire assessment increase in 10 years. Fire Chief John Kanzig says the district is facing serious financial deficits, with reserves nearly gone now after years of overspending. The fire board recently approved a $27 fee increase, along with $300,000 line of credit to cover expenses. Kanzig says there's no theft involved, just a need for better long-term planning. Former Chief Danny Fury, who was fired earlier this year, disputes claims that he mismanaged the district's finances. Well, five people now been arrested in connection with that burglary at Crabs on Pensacola Beach. The Escambia Sheriff's Office says those arrests happened across Mississippi and Alabama, with two suspects in Harrison County and two in Baldwin County, one in Mobile County. Deputies say they recovered a large amount of cash along with tools, masks, and gloves that were used in the break-in. Investigators say the burglars drilled into a safe to steal deposit money. Well, we've got an update on that situation over in Mobile County with the Pritchard Police Department, a grand jury there, now calling for the police department to be abolished and rebuilt after uncovering what they're calling systemic failures. The recommendation came the same day that Police Chief Walter Knight and Major Aaron Tucker were arrested. They're accused of using city time and equipment to provide private funeral escort jobs. District Attorney Keith Blackwood says investigators also found missing evidence and procedural failures across the department. He called it a culture of rot. It's now up to the mayor and Pritchard and their city council to decide the next steps. Al Hurlburt Field has new leadership in one of its key units. Colonel William Jerry took command of the 505th Test and Training Group earlier this month, replacing Colonel James Fields. The group trains leaders who oversee command of air, space, and cyber operations. Fields praised the unit's work in his farewell address. He's now moving on to the 505th Command and Control Wing, also based at Hurlburt. It is 5:34, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast.
We are going to be seeing a small 10% chance of rain today, otherwise mostly sunny skies, high near 90 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 78. For Friday, mostly sunny skies, 20% chance of rain, high near 91. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 78. Heading into your Saturday, 20% chance of rain, otherwise mostly sunny skies, high near 94. And Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 78. This is Brooke Richardson for the First Warning Weather Center.
Right now it's 78 degrees. We've got partly cloudy skies. Your next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Making the wrong choice can be very costly. Choosing the wrong plumbing company can cost you a lot of money. Hi, I'm Judy Lacey with Barbieri Plumbing, and we've been repairing Pensacola's plumbing problems for over 50 years. We are the local originator of the flat rate pricing system, so you don't have to pay by the hour, and there are no surprises. When you need a plumber, make the right choice and call Barbieri Plumbing. We will make your plumbing great again.
License number RF11067749.
Buggy Works, the largest golf cart dealer on the Gulf Coast, is leveling up. Headquartered in Pensacola, now serving Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, and Lake Barton, and proud to help the entire coast ride in style. All the top brands, all in one place. Whether you want luxury, lifted, street ready, family friendly, or a fully customized build, your next ride is waiting. Premium carts, in stock, and ready to deliver. Visit BuggyWorks.com. That's BuggyWorks.com.
Santa Rosa, I am Jill Broxson-Teston, a parent of four amazing children. I understand a strong school system is one of the most important investments we can make in our children's future. That's why I'm running for School Board District 5. My mission is to be your strong advocate for our public school system. I'll lead with transparency and steady leadership to help ensure the long-term success of our district. On August 18th, I'll be honored to earn your vote.
Paid for by the campaign to elect Jill Broxson-Teston for Santa Rosa County School Board.
You're already listening.
News Radio 92.3, I'm Andrew McKay.
So you might as well stay smart all day.
It's the Pensacola Morning News.
From Pensacola Morning News in the morning to pep talk with Meg in mid-morning, NVR late morning to afternoon, you do it from 2 to 4, and Pensacola right now with Chris and Austin through your drive home. News that moves with you all day long.
All day long.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
Good morning, 7:40 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining me in studio, we do this about once a quarter, I think. We usually wind up doing this every 3 months or so. We have Mayor D.C. Reeves in studio to basically not answer my questions, but to answer your questions on, I mean, open game, any subject. Now, it's not public forum. If you want to be Larry Downs Jr. complain about COVID-19, I mean, not really relevant. But if it's city business, if it's related to his job, or if it's something he wants to answer, like my lightning round type questions, you know, he's open. Fair game. DC, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
There we go. Hold on one more time. There we go.
And take two. Thank you so much for having me.
It's always the way this board is all set up and with
which
these.
Microphone
yeah,
those,
no, it's
yeah.
very. It's actually it's designed to confuse people. So it's not well done. But anyway, 437-1620, 437-1620. Anything at all on your mind whatsoever? I just ask one question to kind of get us started, and we'll have him for an hour until 8:30. So you know we have time to answer your questions. The storm, obviously, which. You know, we all knew it was not going to be some major event, but still, it's, you know, if it affects you, it affects you, right?
Yeah, and listen, I think this type of event is a net positive for our citizens because it's a test run for us, right? We dust off the protocol, the SOPs, our firefighters are out there, police was out there, we had a great meeting on Monday morning, we got all the storm drains cleaned out. Just, hey, anytime you get something where we don't have to have any negative impact, but we get a chance to test it, if God forbid, that we start to see more activity through the end of this summer and into the fall, then I think that's a net good thing. So we what I can tell our citizens is we certainly took advantage of that. We ran it as if it was a Category 1, Category 2, and went through that process and got everything cleaned out and ready to go. And your team responded, and fortunately, we didn't need it.
We probably got more rain on Sunday than we've gotten since
That's
then.
Right.
The new Palafox is still going strong with the new stormwater management system.
Yeah, it's obviously it's become a new hobby of people at City Hall. You know, either David Stafford or I. We've had as I'm sure you guys have been sharing the last couple of months, we've had some pretty. Big rain events just for it to be a non-hurricane type of event.
Right.
And it's still there. It hasn't floated away. So that's a good thing.
All right. Very good. So we got some questions coming in, 437-1620. Any update on the professional soccer coming to Pensacola?
Yeah. So we've had some good conversations. Where the sticking point is right now is the USL model, which I believe in this philosophy, is really built around a downtown stadium. It's not really built around putting one out you know, on in the suburbs or it making its
like
own location.
Like OLF8 is not the kind of location they're looking for.
Correct. I mean, okay. The idea is there's the development around it that kind of makes it an all-day event. That is the model that they continue to replicate throughout the country. And again, I'm in agreement with that. That's difficult to find right now.
Yeah.
And there's two. I think there's two hurdles. One is the dirt itself. Where would a stadium like that go?
Mm-hmm.
And number two is the bed tax, in essence, at least philosophically, is spoken for at this point. The bonding of the bed tax for a greater priority, which is the Bay Center. So because naturally we're going to move to step two, which is how would we pay for a soccer stadium? How would the city participate? Even though we don't know at what level, we're not anywhere near there. Because you talk to the ownership group, you talk to the league. But, I mean, listen, we would be have our head in the sand if we thought that if a new facility would come in that there wouldn't be some government participation, right? It's not going to be privately funded 100%. So I think dirt was number one. And then the idea that the spoken-for bed tax with the Bay Center, Convention Center conversation is number two. However, one thing that I'm going to start looking into is – it's one of those middle of the night moments where you're like, well, wait a second. We have a 16-year-old stadium downtown.
Community Maritime Park was the question I had.
Yeah.
So, okay.
You have developable property controlled by the city, not by private entities that could help offset any costs with rent and development to happen around there. So you've got the developability of contiguous parcels or next to or adjacent parcels. We have a 16-year-old stadium. We have, I believe, 5 years left on the Wahoos lease.
Okay.
Well, when it's time to renew with the Wahoos, certainly, like every team in the country, they're going to come and say, we need new seats. We need.
Right.
So we already know that there's going to be some type of renovation coming, and it's about that time. And so now I'm thinking, well, why don't we can we kill lots of birds with one stone and maybe look at making it a permanently mixed-use facility?
Okay. Bay Bluffs, why is it taking so long?
Yeah, great question. We asked the same thing in our building. First of all, we're grateful to get $2.2 million from the state and DEP. This is a perfect example when we talk about property tax. There isn't $2.2 million sitting around just in case there's an emergency closure of a park, right? We had to go find this money. The downside of grants, and this is of no fault of DEP or Tallahassee, the downside of almost every grant is there is a ton of paperwork that needs to take place. And that's why we're so blessed to have gotten more than $200 million now awarded to the city. And you think about our general fund.
Not for this, but across all the grants.
But you get excited when you get the email, and then you know you got a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this particular case.
Because getting it. The time, the process, and then satisfying the requirements of verification involved in using a grant, all of that beginning, middle, and end, right?
That's right. And so in this particular case, with this one grant, for example, we got awarded it close to 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and by no delay on our side, they needed paperwork, they got paperwork. The bottom line is we weren't even given permission to use 1 cent of it, not 1 cent until April 21st of this year.
Mm.
So, it's July right now. So we've been sitting there twiddling our thumbs, making noises, waving our hands to say, guys, we'd love to get this going. So it's absolutely necessary for us to wait. If we spent any money on any day prior to April 21st, then that would have been on the taxpayer in the city. There's no reimbursement. So it's like, hey, mayor, why didn't you just start working on this, that, or the other since you knew you had the money? Not allowed per the grant rules. So you cannot expend $1 of it until you get that clearance on April 21st. So bottom line is where our feet are is we've got HDR on board. We're going through the full structural design, all of that. That'll go through the fall. The goal would be RFP for construction in the spring.
Okay.
So construction will begin. I can guarantee you that next year. But we got to know what we want to have and how far does $2 million go? And I've been tempering expectations.
Right.
We are not building a new community center at Bay Bluffs Park. $2 million is not a lot of money in the grant. When you're building stuff into an eroding bluff, that's not going to go real far. I don't think. I just want to temper expectations. But nonetheless, $2 million is great. And we had zero. So you will get some new amenity. You'll get probably some new experiences down there, and we'll see what parts we can salvage and save, what parts we can.
Okay, Mayor, we got a text here. I'm not sure what this question is asking, but I know you'll have an answer to what you think they might be getting at. The question is, when is Addicts Court going to move to where the old Baptist hospital is being torn down? Is this some rumor online or something?
That's correct. Oh, I think God. A lot of this started with the Fricker Center that, by the way, the city government has zero role in where public housing. That's a completely different board.
Okay.
And so that was
this
some
is one of these social
rumors
media
rumors that,
okay.
That right. when Fricker Center went in, that Ags Court was going to move. Anything about Ags Court, Marino Court, any of the public housing projects, they have their own complete separate board, separate governing body, and all of that.
And not moving.
No one has notified us that actually has control over that Addicts Court is moving at this point.
Also, in the long run, although there is an intent to develop a mixture of housing on the site where Baptist sits right now,
correct.
We are in the not even yet deciding anything phase with that, and it will certainly not become some massive public housing project, at least not if you and the rest of the city council have anything to say about it.
Yes, that's correct. If that could be confused anywhere, it's that, yes, housing, mixed income housing,
right.
all sorts of opportunity will happen at Baptist, but that is there's zero correlation between the existence of Addicts Court on Cervantes Street and the Baptist project.
Very good. Oh, somebody did say city parking is red. Is real blue signs and I said it out loud. And the zone numbers are only two digits. Private lots have
that's
four
right.
or more digits. Is that right for zone numbers?
That is
numbers?
Right.
Okay.
Two
small
digits.
Note.
Yep. That's a good delineator.
Very good. Let's see. Is there a new Publix coming downtown?
There is.
We have 40 seconds.
Okay. Spring and Garden, where the Waverly, the old USO arches are.
Yeah.
Which will be saved, by the way. But there'll be a Publix and some restaurant retail on the corner
okay.
of Spring and Garden, which I think is a good thing. It starts to drag, not just Palafox, not just Balin.
Yeah.
We start to get some more extension of public-facing uses.
Well, for all of those residences, now we'll have, you know, grocery stores are a massively important service, right? So having that available.
Yep.
And will the old school building frontage also stay? The one
yeah,
that's on
yes,
Main Street?
Yeah, anything that's there that was meant to
historical?
Be preserved will be staying
okay,
in this development as well.
Right, I figured yes, but, you know, it's the kind of question if we don't ask it, somebody's going to ask me later. All right, we have more questions for the mayor coming up in just a minute. Like I said, we've got him until 8:30 this morning. So text me your questions, 437-1620. I know a lot of the questions coming in are things that he gets asked all the time and has no power over, like reopening the Grand Hotel. But we'll talk about it. You know, whatever's on your mind.
Hey, happy to talk about it. Yeah.
You know, we've covered it, but that's important because people don't know and they want to learn. The Grand Hotel. You know what? You need to come up with the top 10 things people ask you about that are actually very easy to answer and explain, but really aren't even your job at all.
Yeah.
And I think this has got to be in that category, but you're still trying. So Grand Hotel, where are we at?
Yeah. So Grand Hotel, actually, I think I have a meeting this week with another potential buyer. This is probably my fourth or fifth.
Okay.
And I always point this out. The government does not control the future of someone else's property. So understand, this property is not owned by the city.
Mm-hmm.
It is up to code. They continue to air condition the building. In fact, they're not even required to do that. If there were missing windows or it was becoming a nuisance a la 1750 North Palafox.
Which is definitely that.
Yeah, and so we are going a completely different avenue
that's
there.
That's the old medical facility in front of the ECU wave tank, which people don't know the reference.
Yeah,
go ahead.
That's right. So we are pursuing whatever our capabilities are to eliminate that blight. But this is a building that is compliant with code, that is privately owned. And so I, like every citizen out there, why wouldn't we want something activated? So
right.
So I'm right there with you philosophically, but just to get a base layer of what is or isn't controlled by the government, this is a privately owned parcel. However, this is just a prediction. I think the private market will start to resolve this as momentum builds with the Bay Center. In other words, maybe buyers that have explored this that maybe didn't pull the trigger before, if they knew that there was a $7,500 million renovation going into the building next door, that's naturally going to.
And a convention center light and all this kind of
exactly.
stuff. You know.
It's going to increase the value. So bottom line is this. I think the next government involvement in this, one is I'm certainly happy to meet with any buyer of any private property to help advocate for the great things happening in our city. So we will continue to do that. But I think there'll be a discussion at some point with a potential buyer, with the CRA, if we want to do some type of tax abatement that ensures the preservation of the train station,
mm-hmm.
maybe a parking structure that could go across to the Bay Center if we end up needing it located on
mm-hmm.
that site. So there's lots of conversations to have where there would be government involvement. But at this point, in terms of recruitment of who is going to open the next hotel or whatever they're going to do with it, we're just really active bystanders at this point.
That's a very diplomatic way of saying that nothing's going to happen for 2 years. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately,
no, for
which
sure.
sucks because we all want it to be.
I think if someone bought it, in 3 months, there's lots of work that. I mean, there's, yeah. You got a 40-year-old tower. You've got.
What have they been doing that takes so many years to do?
I know that, and certainly I don't want to speak for the
sure.
property
yeah,
owners.
Yeah. From what I gather, baby. I get it.
From what I gather, the majority of the delay has been on an insurance claim against Sally. That is, and so
well, we understand that.
Yeah. So, but nonetheless, listen, this is a ownership group that's ready to move on from this as well. So they're motivated. We are in pretty regular conversation. So just know that the city government in its secondary role here. Is going to do whatever it can to get that building activated because that's a good thing for everybody.
Okay, this is not a question that came in, but I'm going to make you laugh when I ask it. You ready?
Oh, God.
Why are you wasting all this money rebuilding the fishing pier?
Great question.
It's a county project. It's a FEMA money. You know, they're paying for it from Sally. The one thing I just wanted to mention because you made me think about it is they have made a lot of progress. Like, they've got crossbars on the pilings. I mean, there's a lot of work that has been done on that thing, and it seems to be pretty, close to real. I don't know. It looks like it's very well along. Anyway, so I need to
But ask. No, but hey, to tie in the Wayside question Park. About Bay Bluffs Park, for example, where about grant money is, I don't want to speak for the county, but when you get money to replace a fishing bridge, it has to replace a fishing bridge.
That's a perfect build, right.
A very common misperception is, well, wait, $20 million, we could have used that on the homelessness. We could have used that. That's not how funding works, outside funding that has specific tasks. So I'm sure that the $20 million for this fishing bridge, you had two options, give it back or rebuild the fishing bridge.
What percentage of the questions that you get asked are essentially a byproduct of people not understanding which government controls which issue or how funding pots of money are the answer to the question that they don't understand why we did this instead of that? What percentage of the questions are that?
The majority.
Okay.
And I always say this too, is like, listen, before I was in this job, I wouldn't have the understanding.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are trying to put food on the table, get your kids picked up from school, all of those different things. And it's complicated. It's complicated because of so many government entities, again, school boards, counties, cities, who does what. I only bring that up to say, a lot of people ask very good questions like today that maybe it's perceived or misperceived.
Right.
But I always say, hey, take a pause when you think the city can do something or the county or Santa Rosa County or Gulf Breeze can do something. Many, many times, the vast majority of misperceived responsibilities of the government is built around just a lack of understanding of who is in charge of doing what. But that's hard to track. And so, again, I sympathize with that, totally understand it as a citizen.
What about the roundabouts on Palafox?
Yeah, yes.
The mini roundabouts that aren't roundabouts?
Yeah, so thank
the
you for
asking visual roundabouts.
This. What I love, I'm not smart enough to know the scientific term for this, but the way it's being described or, like, why did they put these roundabouts in, that's exactly why. The idea is it's supposed to slow
confuse
traffic
you a little
down.
Bit. Yeah.
It's supposed to make you pause at the four-way stop. And then and so it's actually proving the point when people are like, why did you put this in? Do I need to drive around it? Or no. But
visual clutter or visual confusion.
So it is not meant to act as a roundabout. The idea is you come to a four-way stop, you see some change in the pattern of the pavement, and you can clearly see you can drive over it. Feel free to drive over, Candy.
Through the roundabout.
We've got video of you doing it already.
It's weird because people will do both.
I saw Scott Lunsford told me he was following somebody and he watched the person bend around the curve as he went through the four-way stop intersection, which cracks me up.
You know what they did when they did that?
They were safe. They were safe.
Yeah. It's actually exactly what the intent of the designer was to have that. It wasn't meant to act 100% as a roundabout.
All right. So we're going to just pause it right there. We did an hour with the mayor yesterday, and I just wanted to give you actually Candy did a great job of picking the best portions of that to use for the replay. But you can find that on the podcast page at newsradio923.com. You can always listen to the show if you miss parts of it, or later on in the day you want to listen to the morning show. It's available on the app. The News Radio Pensacola app, and just hope you enjoy. Anyway, she does a great job putting all that stuff up for you. Hey, if you get locked out of your car, Ace Unlocks, right? They do that 24 hours a day. They help people. They've been doing it since the 90s. They actually started with students at UWF. But since then, they have broadened to do all kinds of locks and lock-related things. And that's one of the things people maybe don't understand about them is that they're not just the people who get you into your locked car. They can also replace your fob or give you a fob if you damage it, or if you lose it, or if you only got one with your car and you want to. I know I got a fob for my Civic a couple of years ago. They were easy and inexpensive compared to the dealership. It was great. They have all of the same, you know, same software, same machines, exact same computers. They can do exactly what the dealership does. It just doesn't cost quite as much. So they can take care of you for that. That's actually the number one thing that they do is make fobs for people. They also do residential install locks, keypad, rekey a house, app-based locks, so you can control by time who has access to you. That's kind of a cool thing. Like, you hold your phone up, and if you're permitted to be in the house or whatever from 10 to noon, and you're there at 11:30 or at 9:30, won't let you in. It's app-based. It's just a very cool little thing. Even car control modules, like if you're a home, like you repair your car yourself, but you want to program the computer, basically, they can help you with that because they can download all that software. Anyway, Ace Unlocks, 24 hours a day, 505-7545 on Airport at the Railroad Tracks. Mention my name, Andrew McKay, and get 10% off.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include two times Tuesday, six free shrimp added to the six-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit Davis Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Greater Pensacola's leaders are in the tallest buildings and smallest shops. And they come together here to drive growth and innovation, to bridge industries, to share fresh ideas, and to understand how they can play a part in Greater Pensacola's success. The Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. We believe local businesses are the cornerstone of a great community.
Hey, hey, Pensacola pet parents. Got questions about your fur babies? Well, I'm Dr. Mark Sprayberry, owner of Olive Branch Pet Hospital. I would like to invite you and your friends to tune in to the all-new Pet Talk, where I'll be answering all your questions live on air.
Tune in today at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
So what did I miss today?
Good question.
I'm Andrew McKay.
Chris Bryan.
Austin Price.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Well, there you have it.
This is the First Secretary. I'm speaking to the individual who has stolen the property of the USSR. Can you hear me, Mr. Gant?
Good morning, 5:58 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Oh, we got more details yesterday about, remember the Jay employee, April Watson, who had been convicted and served a year for, you know, fooling around with a 17-year-old boy when she was a teacher. And then she'd been ever since on the sex offender registry, and that has all kinds of rules, right? Well, she'd been up for being the city manager, or, you know, that was the consideration after the existing Jay city manager retired. And then she got arrested again just recently because when you temporarily reside somewhere other than your home, you have to notify the sheriff about that. So I guess they went RVing at the RV park on Avalon, and she didn't do that, even though she has done it many other times before for other things, and that's why she got arrested. So, it is a violation. There's a reason these rules exist, but if you're wondering, like, did she, you know, violate again? Well, I mean, no, not in the way you might think. What was the other thing I was going to... Oh, Byron Donalds. Not Byron Donalds. Well, actually, Byron Donalds has filed a bill in the U.S. House... protecting ratepayers. It's called the Protecting Ratepayers Act to shield Americans from data centers. You know, jumping on that bandwagon. But, you know, it's. I actually agree with this measure. It means that if a data center comes in, it has to generate its own power and find its own water, basically. That it cannot displace what you get as a customer from those things. Which, that's very reasonable. I think any major endeavor like that should have to do that, so that's good. There's also a lawsuit against James Fishback, candidate for the governor of Florida. He voted in the D.C. elections recently, which would mean he lived there, and inside the 7-year time frame, and he might be ineligible.
Listen on air, 92.3, 95.3.